Hey, y'all.
This is Talkin' Trash with Liv
and Lizzie,
the podcast where two friends show each other our silliest and most treasured movies.
Each week, we'll watch a beloved movie,
no matter how corny, childish, or contrived.
Sometimes a masterpiece with minor flaws.
Other times, a magnificent mess.
Because one man's trash
is Liv and Lizzie's treasure. Welcome back to another...
That's why I said good morrow
episode.
Hello, because
dang
I
it.
Knew that...
Sorry.
That poo was going to start barking.
To boof.
Yep.
Well, welcome back to another week of the Bingeton.
Yes. It's been a couple weeks since we
it
did
has.
The last one.
Sorry yeah. for the delay. We both went on vacation at kind of
wonderful
separate times.
Wonderful vacations.
Great vacations.
But yeah, no, I've been looking forward to
jumping back in,
completing this beautiful hot mess, beautiful ugly mess.
I have mixed emotions about it. I'm really excited to watch it with you.
Uh-huh.
But I really didn't enjoy the second half of the show very much.
Yeah.
The first time I watched it, so I'm nervous that I'm gonna hate it. Because, like, going back and rewatching it with you, I realized that there were I had a lot more issues with the show.
Yeah.
Watching it with, like, a critical lens a second time than just, like, garbage watching it the first time.
Yeah.
So I'm worried that, like, the things that I liked about the second half are no longer going to be able to redeem the things that I didn't,
right?
Because I wasn't even aware of the things that I didn't like in the first half until
right.
this go around.
I remember, and I think I said this last time, that I was very invested in the romantic relationship in the first half,
mm-hmm.
and in the second half, I was very invested in the everything besides the romantic relationship,
yes.
all the other drama.
As soon as the sorry. my dad's texting me. As soon as the I burn for you was out of the way, I didn't care anymore.
Yes, I'm exactly the mm-hmm. same. And I am... So with that in mind, because most of my critiques from the first half were for the romantic relationship,
mm-hmm.
I actually think I'm still going to really enjoy this family drama... we stole or wagered away the daughter's dowries drama.
Yeah.
The let's invite all the married women of high society to a party drama.
That part was fun.
I am actually looking forward to that.
And I feel like we already hit a lot of the things that bugs me, even about the second half. With the exception of some of the issues with their relationship, which I think we'll touch on after we come back. Because we already talked about the queer baitiness, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, good. I was trying to remember what we talked about, and I was like, my brain is still kind of at the beach, so I don't remember. But yeah, I think that might be fair, that, like, because I'm so kind of jaded by their relationship, and I know what to expect this time, I might even like it better.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see. I'm open to it.
Oh, so speaking of beach things, I too am coming off of the beach and I'm still in like post beach recovery mode. I was visiting a friend who is in the Marines, and we
mm-hmm.
went out with her Marine and Navy friends for one of their
fun.
30th birthdays, and I'm still recovering. So if my voice sounds like about two octaves deeper, that is why. Wonderful people, lovely, still catching up on sleep. It's great.
Yeah.
But I'm also kind of in that, like, I'm also sort of in the beach brain mode where
yeah.
Have enjoyed my summer thoroughly and plan to continue.
I went from beach mode to I took some extra shifts at work, some like overtime kind of stuff where I got paid a lot extra, which was dope, but it was like really hard work, and I did jumped into that like right after the beach, but now I'm off for a little bit, and so I'm kind of like, I don't know, almost like a whiplash of like vacation, not vacation, vacation, and it's like it's kind of messing with my brain. And then I was telling you this earlier, but I'll tell our listeners. My husband and I stayed up till like 2 a.m. last night. We've been watching The Good Place, and it was like 10 o'clock, and we were like halfway through season 4, which is the last season. And I was like, man, I want to keep watching, but we need to go to bed because Kyle has work today. And he was like, screw it, I don't care, I'll be tired for work. So we just stayed up and finished the whole season. And then we were both like blubbering, because if you have not seen it, it ends perfectly. It's really, really good. But it's emotional. It's bittersweet. And it's one of the best shows I've seen in a really long time.
That's what a lot of people have told me. Yeah. So I'm excited to go and finish it. I'm on season 3.
But you know when you like watch something really good, and then you're done with it, that chapter closes, but then you're just like, huh, what now? Yep. For like the next week. That's kind of where I am. So I'm excited to have something to jump into, even if it's something that I've already seen, just to like kind of fill that void of like, what do I watch now?
Yeah, I know it well. I've done that a lot with books, even though my to be read list is endless. I've been like, huh, that was really good, what do I do with my life,
right
now?
Right.
So I know that feeling. I guess we should have started with this. We have not prepared the vibe, but what is the vibe?
We kind of had a vibe.
We started our vibe.
Yeah. So I made us brunch. We made homemade biscuits.
Which was delicious.
Thanks. I'm glad it turned out okay. It's summer.
Yep.
We have our hats. We're not wearing hats, but if we did, they'd be on backwards.
Yes.
And it'd be time to
party.
Yeah. So we had some fresh strawberries and some blackberries because it's summer in the South, and that's what you eat.
You know what, though? I feel like the homemade biscuits and berries, while deeply Southern, are also helping contribute. I don't know if I've said this on the podcast yet, but I have decided that I am going to live my hot girl summer, but that my hot girl summer is going to be Emma Thompson at the beginning of Much Ado About Nothing, Hot Girl Summer.
Yes.
Full cottagecore summer.
Yes.
And I feel like that contributes to it very nicely.
I'm trying really hard. So you have a friend named Caroline who I met for the first time recently.
We had a wonderful time.
We had a great time.
Oh, yeah. I don't even think we talked about that.
I don't know if we did.
We had a wine weekend.
It was great. We went up to some wineries. One of them was like straight Much Ado About Nothing vibe.
Absolutely. Beautiful sunny
so
hill.
So pretty.
Like White House way off in the distance. Yeah. Dogs everywhere.
Yeah. And we were all wearing like crop tops and high waisted stuff. And like the sun was shining.
It was like 70 degrees.
It was perfect.
Yeah.
It was like the breeze was blowing. We had a cottagecore tea party.
Yep.
We drank more wine after that. It's
set
great.
Up by the lovely Liv, and it was beautiful.
It was fun. I had a good time. But honestly, like, so Caroline made this breakfast, and I've literally been thinking about it ever since.
Yes. She homemade biscuits. Her homemade sourdough loaf that she then toasted.
Oh, no. You don't understand. Homemade sourdough loaf, toasted. Then there was homemade from scratch pesto.
Yep.
And goat cheese. The goat cheese wasn't homemade, but you know. Goat cheese and avocado. Like, so it was like really yummy pesto avocado toast.
Yep.
Homemade biscuits, crab cakes, which at first I was like, for breakfast. And then I tried them and I was like, for breakfast?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. And like all this fresh fruit and like lavender honey. And like she made all these like simple syrups to put in cocktails, like homemade. But all of them were like fresh wild violets.
So she's a forager. She's a literal forager. Yeah. I went on a walk with her the other day and she was like, oh, mulberries. Give me a second. And just like stopped and just picked them up off the sidewalk.
She's what I want to be when I grow up.
Yeah.
She's like got some real hardcore like cottagecore witchy vibes.
Yes. If you were to ask her, she would say that the beginning of Kiki's delivery service is the closest to her aesthetic that she's ever seen.
Yeah. See, my problem is my aesthetic is like Howl's Room from Howl's Moving Castle.
Yeah, you're a little more goblin, a little less
witch. including the like kind of grime on the walls and stuff. Yeah. But unlike Howl, I don't have the cool magic to back up or to like back it up. So it's just weird. It's just like weird knickknacks and like a cup that's been sitting on my bedside for like a month and something's growing in it. And I keep forgetting that it's there because I have like no like object permanence, and I'll look at it and be like, I need to take that downstairs to the sink. And then I look away and I immediately forget that the cup's there.
Yep.
So yeah, I'm basically Howl, but not cool. Like Howl.
Not you cool.
I'm kind of cool. I'm just not magical. But I want them Kiki vibes.
I think friendship is the greatest magic of all.
Aw, thanks, Lizzie.
Got you. So anyway, we're talking about what's the vibe for this morning?
So we had Starbucks and fresh like cottagecore breakfast, and then we're gonna transition into mimosas. So today is like hot girl summer brunch, which feels like a very Bridgerton vibe.
Yeah. Next episode is I Burn For You episode, and I'm gonna need at least a couple mimosas in my tum tum before we get there.
I burn for you.
I shout out to the people on TikTok who wrote the entire like Bridgerton musical. That at the time I was like, I would pay so much money to see this. Now I'm like, I'd probably pay some money. But one of the best songs in it is their I Burn For You
song. Yeah, it's pretty good.
Really good.
It's pretty good. Okay, so I don't know if this is a post conversation or not, but I'm gonna
tell me the topic and I'll give my two cents.
My opinions on the sex scenes.
Oh, I think that should be a post.
A post. We'll come back to it then. I have some takes about like my enjoyment of sex scenes in cinema versus literature.
I have some serious critiques of the...
I have a lot of critiques.
Yeah.
I have so many critiques.
Yeah. No, I think that's a post. I think we... Okay. I think we have some good evidence to pull from.
Yeah.
To...
But let's say this up front. Since we are going to be discussing the sex scenes...
Oh, yeah. First off, NSFW.
Yes, this is an 18+.
Not like graphic.
Not graphic. But the conversation will be there. So this is an 18+, not safe for work episode. So if you're listening to this at work, since we haven't talked about anything like weird yet, this might be a good time to pause.
Yep.
Reflect.
Yep.
And then listen to us on your way home from work. Instead of, like, at your office chair.
Also in the NSFW category, not just talking about sex scenes in general, but specifically things dealing with consent and or rape.
Yes.
So
if those things upset you, just
be aware.
Be forewarned.
But also, if those things upset you and you've seen Bridgerton, you're aware of
what we're going to be talking about.
So,
if you haven't seen Bridgerton, it might be worth watching before coming back to this conversation.
Yeah.
Because, as always, spoilers ahead. It sounds like a pirate. Like,
there be spoilers ahead.
Spoilers off the port bow.
You know what we need? We need like radio show buttons that we can hit. And there needs to be like a, so as always, burp, yar, there be spoilers ahead. And there's like cannon noises.
Boom, 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 boom. Spoilers. I sound like the
cat. Real fans tell no spoilers.
I feel like I sounded like the cat from The Last Unicorn, that I be what I be, and what I be is a cat. I think about that line all the time.
It's like supposed to be so profound, but you're just like,
it lives rent free in my head.
Yeah, dude.
You're a cat. Oh my god. It's like, yep, that's what you are. All right. Let's do this.
Yeah, I think we're gonna have a lot more to talk about after we've actually watched this. So,
mimosas ahoy.
Mimosas ahoy. Here there be spoilers and adult content.
Yar. Anyways, Bridgerton, I guess.
Well, I feel like the way I feel right now about this, this has been like one of the strangest podcast experiences for us. Something about splitting it in two, which mm-hmm. is kind of weird for me.
It's true.
Not in a bad way, but like, I think it kind of reflects, you just said like at the end of this you're feeling kind of meh.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that's reflective. Like, we don't have like, we covered most of our thoughts about the series as a whole in the first part.
Yeah.
But like, I still have things like that I've realized after watching the second half of this show.
Yeah.
But it is just kind of a strange feeling for this particular podcast.
You know what's funny to me is if you were to graph my feelings
mm-hmm.
from the first time I watched this series to this time watching the series,
mm-hmm.
they are mirrored opposites. So the first time I watched the series, I was really into it, and I was really, really, really invested in Daphne and Simon's relationship. And then, like, they got together, and I was just kind of, my enjoyment for the show peaked with the I Burn For You scene,
mm-hmm.
and it was all downhill from there.
Mm-hmm.
This go around, I was so fed up with the Duke and Daphne's relationship
mm-hmm.
that instead of me being excited to see them get together, I was so annoyed that even though the I Burn For You scene is great, and one thing that I've got to say, and I always kind of feel like this when I trash talk a show, 9 times out of 10, my issues are not with the actors.
Yes.
I think that the actors who played Daphne and the actor who played Simon had wonderful chemistry together.
Mm-hmm.
I think they delivered some kind of crappy lines as best as they possibly yes. could. And the second go around, having more of a full picture of their relationship, I was struck by how toxic I found it.
Mm-hmm.
So when they're like, when he was like, I burn for you, I was like, shut up. Like, just, or, you know what? Don't shut up. Like, talk to each other.
Yes.
Communicate.
Yes.
And I get that that's part of what makes a romance like this appealing.
So, I actually have very, I don't want to take away from the direction that you were heading with your comment, because I might go down a big tangent with what I'm about to say here.
Okay. Let me just finish up my thought real quick then. I love a good slow burn, which mm-hmm. I feel like this is trying to be.
Mm-hmm.
But here's my favorite type of slow burn. I like couples in denial, couple doesn't want to get together because of something, or there's something that impedes them from getting together. Drama, 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 drama. They get together, and their relationship from that point on is solid.
Mm-hmm.
And then outside forces try to pull them apart.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's the kind of slow burn that I'm here for. Or if you really want to commit, give me a slow burn where they don't get together until the end. Give me a Howl's Moving Castle where you mm-hmm. see their like relationship building and growing, but there's no actual love confession
mm-hmm.
until the end, and we don't see them kiss until like the last scene.
Yeah.
Sure, give me that.
Yeah.
Don't give me this toxicity in the name of slow burn.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my two cents on it.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts?
Well, before I get down on what I was going to say before, I'll talk about two tropes here. So I will first address the miscommunication trope and then my preferred slow burn trope. So miscommunication trope, strangely, two of my favorite works of all time, I believe are foundational in shaping how the miscommunication trope works in modern romance, and those are Much Ado About Nothing and Pride and Prejudice, two works that I know you love as well. Mm. And I love how it functions in both of those, even though in Much Ado About Nothing, it's my... of the two subplots, it's more pivotal in my least favorite of the subplots, but that is neither here nor there.
Excuse me. I might have another one. We'll see.
I acknowledge how much the miscommunication trope was formed by those and how much I enjoy it in those. But beyond that, beyond like really foundational works of romance and romantic comedy, I am never a fan of miscommunication as a trope, simply because it would be so easily resolved. And I understand why it's there. We've talked about, you know, needing to communicate things in romantic relations before, and that it is something that is a struggle and a challenge, but it's never really shown as a struggle or a challenge well. I will say, I feel like this show tries at the end to say something really meaningful about, you know, like, love is a choice, and you will face obstacles, and you have to choose that you're going to overcome those, and that there will be trials and difficulties, and that you have to choose to communicate with one another.
Right.
And I do put the burden of miscommunication entirely on... I don't mind saying entirely on the Duke in this relationship, but we will talk about how Daphne responds to that in the worst of all possible ways.
Yeah.
But we'll talk about that later. You talked about the kind of slow burn that you like, where you see the relationship building and then ends with a kiss or something. My preferred slow burn is actually... established relationship already exists, whether it is a friendship or a partnership or work colleagues, whatever, where there is a deep rooted trust implicitly in one another, and you want it to turn to a romance, but there's something that stops it from getting there. And I gotta be honest, sometimes in some of my favorite works,
they never get there.
It never gets there, and I don't care. I still love it. Next time we review a TV show, I got a slow burn for you.
Okay. Yeah. I will say something that you kind of mentioned about you brought up two examples of a miscommunication trope. And I think I have like a suspicion or maybe a thought on what makes those different from something like this. So the whole thing about a good comedy, or a good rom-com, is that it moves from disorder to order. Whereas, and I'll get to this in a minute, but Bridgerton feels like the order is unearned at the end. Like, it's chaos for a long time, and then all of a sudden everything gets wrapped in a neat bow. Whereas, like, in Much Ado About Nothing, the characters Benedict and Beatrice, clearly, if you pay attention to the subtext, they were clearly together once before. And Benedict broke Beatrice's heart, and she is salty about it. And all the miscommunication there comes from hurt, but the hurt... So the miscommunication is a symptom of the hurt, which is a symptom of the love. So as the whole work continues going, Zoe, I know you have opinions.
I know you just want them to talk about their feelings. We get it.
But as the romance keeps going and building, what you find out is the thing that is not being communicated is their feelings for each other. Mm-hmm. And then the play puts them in a position where they can no longer hide their feelings. Mm-hmm. And they are rewarded with relationships that are not toxic. Like, the way that Benedict responds to Beatrice and the way that she, in turn, responds to him at the end of Much Ado About Nothing. I mean, like, he is willing to duel his best friend because of the deep respect and love he has for Beatrice. Mm-hmm. And that's the difference.
Yeah.
In Bridgerton, the miscommunication is, well, let me give one more good example, because we talked about Pride and Prejudice, right? Yes. So, like,
another one where the miscommunication is, I don't know how to talk about my feelings.
Exactly. And there's this one part where, like, Darcy he doesn't communicate what he is going to go do. He just leaves after Elizabeth has told him what Wickham has done mm-hmm. to Lydia. And she doesn't say, oh, Darcy, what a dick, he left me. Like, she doesn't place any blame on him. She has so much respect for him that even though there's miscommunication in that scene, she says he probably wants to distance himself from me because he is a good person and I am worried that I am dragging him down. So even though there is a level of, like, maybe even toxicity there that Elizabeth is dealing with, it's like a personal esteem issue and not a issue of esteem towards a partner. Mm. And that's what I think these shows get wrong. For the sake of drama, Bridgerton asks us to believe that Daphne loves every part of Simon. She tells Simon that she loves even the parts that he feels are shameful. Mm-hmm. And yet, she never addresses verbally what was the actual issue in their relationship. Mm-hmm. Because Simon never says that he feels like he is unlovable to her. Yes. She infers that. But we as the audience don't even fully get to, like, see her shift from that. From, like, yes. being mad at him for lying to that. Like, it's hinted, but honestly not well. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how it is in the book. But in the show, it just feels like she's mad at him for lying. And then she's like, oh, your daddy was mean to you, so that excuses everything. Like, mm-hmm. The progression's not good. And the thing that is miscommunicated, it's not a failure to understand one another. It is Simon's reluctance to talk to her.
Yes.
Because he fundamentally does not trust Daphne. And I'm not saying that that makes him bad or evil, but that is a toxic behavior because he mm-hmm. believes that he is not worthy of love. And so if Daphne knows him, she will not love him.
Yeah.
Fundamentally.
Yeah.
And then Daphne, when she does kind of find out the truth, she has grown so accustomed. Zoe, will you hush? I know you have opinions. She has become so accustomed both to Simon being aloof and not talking about his feelings and a society where things have to be kind of hidden and concealed and where she's not allowed to know things. So she has had to fight for kind of power in these social situations.
Yeah.
So it leads her to, like, handle this situation in a way that is toxic is not the right word for it. It's evil. Daphne is bad in that scene.
Yes.
So yeah, that's my two cents on Bridgerton and why it doesn't work.
I will say it is trying to do what is often a trope in period drama, which is we can't talk about things directly mm-hmm. because we must be discreet. But there is this weird thing in Bridgerton where it's like, we can't talk about things directly. We must be discreet. But then people will walk up and be like, I hope you're using your energy to make babies.
Right.
And so there is kind of this weird, it sort of explores this weird double standard. I do think one thing it does well is exploring the double standard between men and women, mm-hmm. which I'll talk about a little bit more later. But yeah, there is something about, you know, rather, and you mentioned this, like, it's trying to build off of this, you know, concealed, repressed ignorance that causes all of the problems. Mm-hmm. And you made a good point, which was, if part of this is Daphne is ignorant of things, mm-hmm. you know, why wasn't that how she, you know, ended up trying to get pregnant? Or mm-hmm. how was that not how she learned the reality of how he'd lied to her?
Yeah, like, why couldn't she have just been... Okay, this is the not safe for work part. We're going to start talking about the sex scenes. Why couldn't she
just
have...
We'll critique them momentarily, but...
Why couldn't she just have been on top and been in such ecstasy that she didn't realize that Simon was protesting beneath her, mm-hmm. and then feels, like, confused and... You know, maybe
What's
even a little bad afterwards, yeah. right? And then that causes a miscommunication breakdown and expands on the themes of Daphne is not told anything, and therefore she loses agency in these situations, even mm-hmm. even when it seems like she has agency.
Yeah.
But instead they were like, no, let's make her a rapist.
Yeah.
And I've heard in the book it's even worse.
I have heard the same.
I haven't seen it or read it.
Well, my understanding is that in the book... He says, stop, no, get off.
Mm-hmm.
And here, that doesn't happen. All he does is say her name. And you can see, though...
You can see that he's uncomfortable. Yes. He says, wait, right at the end.
Yeah.
But even, you know, like, I think that the writers of the show were like, well, we want people to be sympathetic towards Daphne, so we have to rewrite this to make her... someone we can sympathize with. But it's like, if you're yeah. going to rewrite it anyways, like, commit. Just take yeah. the rape out. It was unnecessary. Yeah.
It's such a shame, because I said one of the things that the show did well is that after she calls out her mother in what I think mm-hmm. is a great scene, where she's like, you told me nothing about the realities of the world. Mm-hmm. You taught me how to pretend and be hostess and, you know, live this pretty comfortable life, mm-hmm. but nothing about reality.
Mm-hmm.
And after she calls her out on that, she goes to Marina and goes to help Marina, because she's mm-hmm. like, this isn't fair that you're being left alone here, yeah. and I will do what I can to find the father and have him support you, and I will use my influence mm-hmm. and the power that I have to make this possible for you. And I thought that was such a great, you know, character growth and moment of her employing her agency, but we're being asked to sympathize with her in that and see growth in that after she has done this.
Yeah. And to me, the worst part of it all is that Daphne makes amends for some of the assumptions that she's had towards other women.
Mm-hmm.
We see her tone change towards Eloise.
Mm-hmm.
We also see her mother's tone change towards Eloise. We see her being kind to Marina. We see her being kind to the Featheringtons.
Yeah, I really like that.
She recognizes that there's something so flawed about the whole system and the way it treats women. And she's right. But the problem is the system also led to her hurting Simon.
Yeah.
And she never says that she's sorry.
That is my biggest
and
issue.
And that drives me nuts. Simon deserves an apology.
Yeah.
And frankly, he does need to apologize to her as well yeah. for lying, because she is right. He said, I can't have children with you. Not, I will not. And those are two separate things.
Yes.
And he knew that she lacked information
yes.
and used that to his advantage, and that's wrong.
She asks him after he, like, pulls out, she's like, does that hurt? Mm-hmm. And he just kind of laughs it off. Like, you know she's ignorant.
Yeah, and he had every opportunity to tell her and give her that dignity. And he never does it. And it's selfish that he never does it.
Yes.
But it does not excuse what she did to him.
No.
And so while he he definitely should say that he is sorry, to me, Daphne is more in the wrong.
Yes. Yeah, they're both just, like, very, very messed up. But
if I were friends with them in real life, I would sit them down and be like, I think you should go to couples counseling.
Okay, speaking of being around them as a couple, so many instances where right in front of their servants, they're just having the grossest conversations. Oh my God. And he's like pulling her gloves off at the table and kissing her hands, and they're right
there. It's gross.
And he says something about her conjugal exploits in front of one of the servants. I also joked that some servant is gonna have to go around and clean up every spot where they were a thing.
He pulls out, ejaculates into a rag, and then just leaves the rag on his desk in one scene. And all I could think of is, that man is never going to clean up after himself. Some poor servant is having to clean up after him every time.
Every service in that home is sticky.
Disgusting.
Yeah.
Like, okay. Should we move on? Since we're talking about the sex, though, should
let's talk about sex and how they needed some edits and fades and cuts.
What is the name of the actor who plays Simon? Do you remember off the top of your head?
I know it's like Jean Reggae Page or some order of those three names.
Okay, I can't remember what the order is.
I never remember what the order is.
Mr. Page, right? I think that's his last name. That man is so attractive.
Right?
But the sex scenes in this,
they're the least sexy part.
Make me like embarrassed to look at him. And her, too, frankly. But, like, I'm sorry. They're just too fast.
Okay, so I have had this conversation not just with you, mm-hmm. but with multiple women, all of whom agree that, first off, no way in, like, 30 seconds or less Mm-mm. are you in the throes of ecstasy
No.
while he is being that forceful and fast.
No.
Secondly, though, it's a very simple solution. If you don't want to have them on screen having sex for a long period of time, you have cuts.
Yep.
You have fades. You cut to different parts
they
of the body.
They even do it in one part. They do a montage.
They have a montage in slow-mo, and that is much better.
That whole scene is so sexy.
Leave some stuff to the imagination.
But then they keep going through these scenes of, like, 30-second sex scenes that are incredibly fast, and it's just Simon, like, going at it with Daphne lying there like a rag doll, and then he pulls out, and I'm like, I don't want to see that. I feel uncomfortable.
You know what I've realized? This is one of the first series where the act itself is integral to the plot. It's not just, oh, these two characters are having sex. It is this key part of their marital relations is integral to the plot and to their internal character conflicts, and we have to show that. The problem is, then you don't get sexy sex scenes. And yeah. Here's the thing. If they wanted that to be the case, if they wanted that to be, like, part of the thematic, like, we had these beautiful love scenes, but then everyone that ended with, you know, or the ones where Daphne's realizing what he's doing, if those were suddenly fast and not sexy, that would work tonally because you'd be saying something. But yeah, no, none of these scenes are appealing. You and I both felt like the scenes when, like, people would be laying in bed together cuddling, I said that the Duke is sexy up until they have sex, and then he's not
sexy. It's true. Then it's just both.
Nothing is as attractive as when he licks ice cream off a spoon, and it's that's true. Like three episodes before they get married.
And she's cute, and then they have sex, and I'm just like, I don't want to look at either of you anymore. I feel dirty. This feels weird.
Yeah.
I feel intrusive and invasive and voyeuristic. Like, I saw something I wasn't supposed to see.
Yes.
And also, foreplay, dude. It's a thing. If you want it to be sexy, include some of that.
Which, okay, so you were the one who told me that while the book was written by a woman, this was written by a man. And I'm not sure who directed the episodes. But I'm like, this can't have been directed by a woman.
No.
Like, no. I don't know. I just...
And even when the sex scenes are sexy, sometimes they just don't make sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, like, how in detail I want to get about that, but, like...
Yeah.
It. Sometimes I'm just like, what? Like, why?
Yep.
Like, why there? Why now?
Why in this moment? I made a joke that when they go out to the gazebo pagoda thing or whatever, the wildest dreams scene,
mm-hmm.
I'm like, first off, this pagoda is only here because there was a rain pagoda in Pride and Prejudice. Bless you.
You're 100% right.
And second off, when they get out there, there's like a blanket and a cozy spot all set up.
And her hair is like full up and it's completely down by the time they get there. And I'm like, there's not a bobby pin in sight. There's not a hair tie. I'm like, where did it all go?
Oh, man.
It's like literally the cut is so bad. Like the continuity error between her hair being like half up, like it's falling out of the bun. And then there's no bun to be seen. Literally, it's a jump cut.
Yeah.
And I'm just like... Keep the continuity and let Simon take her hair down.
Yeah.
That's sexy. Those little moments of intimacy are missing in the latter half of the show.
Yes.
It's all about the sex and it's not about the intimacy.
Yes.
That's a huge problem.
I completely agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that is one of my biggest is with the second half of the show. I will say, still stand by, I rather enjoy all the rest of the drama that's going on around.
Mm-hmm.
I still like the Lady Whistledown mystery. I loved watching it this time, knowing some things. And so, yeah, I was still kind of invested in what was happening with the rest of the ton.
I felt like, kind of like I was telling you, my arc was... mirrored this time. So last time I was really, really enjoying it and then my enjoyment tanked.
Mm-hmm.
This time I was really not enjoying it and then my enjoyment came back.
Yeah.
And I did feel, as angry as I still am at Daphne, I feel a lot more sympathy for her this time. Like watching it, knowing what she was going to do and seeing everything that led up to it and really taking into account how little she understood about sex.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, okay. It doesn't excuse what she did, but at least it contextualizes it enough that, like, I don't forgive her for it, but I don't have to hate her as much. You know, I can have that complicated relationship.
I also found that in this second watching, I'm really invested in all of the female figures in Daphne's life.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm invested in her mom and her mom's struggle with her children wanting to leave the house.
Mm-hmm.
I'm invested in Lady Danbury and how she's trying to be supportive of all the married women in society. Mm-hmm. And I'm invested in Delacroix, the friggin' dress shop owner.
Yeah, I care about her. I was saying one of my favorite conversations was between Marina and Lady Featherington.
She asked her how she lives a life without love.
Yeah. And Lady Featherington says something like, you're very strong, Miss Thompson. You might even be stronger than me. Mm-hmm. Like,
you find little things in your life to love, your children and your home.
Mm-hmm.
I really enjoy that.
Yeah. And I like, most of the struggles. The financial element with the Featheringtons is really interesting to me.
Me too. I want to know who inherited the Featherington estate.
Mm-hmm.
Who is this man?
I know, I'm excited. And even I found the notion that Penelope ratted out her own family because of how deeply she loves Colin. The contextualization of knowing that she's Lady Whistledown let me understand why that story came out and why she waited so long to publish it.
One of my favorite scenes in the entire show is when she goes, she and Eloise have been fighting, and she goes to Eloise in tears when she knows that she knows that Marina is going to still marry Colin, even though she doesn't love him. And you see her go to her in tears. And first off, I didn't notice this the first time, Eloise is still in her nightgown, but Penelope's fully dressed.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't really question it until you realize Penelope's been to the printers.
Yep.
And she's weeping because she knows what she's just done.
Yes.
To her family and to Colin.
Mm-hmm.
But I loved that part of the show. I really, really like Penelope. Also, speaking of Colin, I said this while you were watching the show. I appreciate having him as a character, and I hope this doesn't change. I've not read the books. But having most of the romance tropes is like the rakish gentleman and the virtuous virgin lady. And I kind of like having this character who, he's a flirt, but like he is super naive and innocent. I hope that that remains his character whenever he becomes a romance. If they get to 4 seasons of this show, whenever he becomes a romantic lead.
It's interesting because knowing what I know about who he ends up with, and like we said, spoilers ahead. And I only know this because I like Googled the books.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a whole book, assuming that they end up together. I know that there's a book about the relationship between Penn and Colin.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really fascinated to look at that relationship more closely. This idea of here is this like ray of sunshine boy who is just honest and truthful.
Mm-hmm.
And here is duplicitous Penn.
Yeah.
This master manipulator who lives in the shadows because nobody pays any attention to her, and yet who notices everything.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, who is spreading, most of what she spreads is completely true, but, you know, like
hot goss.
Hot gossip, yeah. Like, I find that really fascinating.
Yeah.
Well,
and apparently in the books, the whole Lady Whistledown thing is really not a big deal until you get there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not revealed in The Duke and I.
Mm.
And so I am fascinated by how they incorporate that throughout the other ones, because the Lady Whistledown mystery is by far the most intriguing part of this particular season of television. One thing that wasn't in this that I wish I'd gotten was when she publishes that piece about like someone tried to reveal my identity, like a noble attempt. I was like, gosh, why didn't we get a cut to the queen just being pissed? I feel like she is going to wreck Eloise.
I like to, didn't she call Eloise a noble adversary? Or
well,
she
I
used
wasn't
that
sure.
phrase, but I wasn't sure who
I was.
Referring
I thought she
to.
Was referring to the queen.
I suppose
the queen
was. Yeah.
Trying to out her.
That's still
someone
what a
almost
ballsy
discovered
move.
My identity, a noble adversary.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I do really like that element. Really, to be honest, I felt like most of the actors are really solid in this show.
I agree.
The girl who plays Penn.
Yeah.
To me, is hands down the best.
Yeah.
Her performance is really nuanced. And going back and watching it again, I was like, damn, girl. Like, I want to see more that she's in. I know she's in Dairy Girls. I've seen that. Fabulous. It's so fun.
Mr. Page does one thing incredibly well, which is my favorite thing for period drama romance boys to do, which is he does the half agony, half hope exceptionally well. He looks at her with such longing. But that's...
Here it is. Here comes the smolder.
Basically.
Yeah.
But I feel like the actress who plays Penelope has a very wide range, because we have to see her in high highs and low lows.
Yeah. And she does all of them beautifully. Yes. Yeah. So overall, I have one more thing that I mentioned that is something that kind of bugs me about the show. There are times, you mentioned this, like, it kind of seems at first, at least, like Benedict is cool with...
Okay, yeah.
I can't remember the man's name. The painter.
Yeah.
He seems like he's pretty accepting of him being gay.
Yeah.
And, like, kind of understands the relationship he has with his wife.
Then he's like, explain it to me.
Yeah, but then all of a sudden he, like, just randomly gets, like, a 5-minute bout of homophobia. And it felt like that was there, not because it was a part of Benedict's character, mm-hmm. but because the show wanted to make a critique of homophobia. So it's like the painter wasn't talking to Benedict. He was just, like, wagging his finger at the audience. Like, don't be homophobic.
But everything that he said about, like, you know, oh, we have to live in constant fear, and you can be right next to someone but be oceans away, that was clearly meant to parallel... Daphne and Simon, where they were at, which was fine. I thought the speech was fine, but it didn't need to be made with this accusatory tone. You could have said all of those things mm-hmm. with him, you know, being like, you know, you're so powerful, why the secrecy? Or, you know, or even when he first was trying to introduce him to his friend, and Benedict was like, no. I thought his discomfort was coming from the assumption that he was gay. Mm-hmm. So even if the conversation had been like, oh, you're not interested
in... Yeah, I'm like, no, it's not really my thing, but, like, more power to you.
Yeah, but that's when that conversation can come up. But mm-hmm. yeah, it was odd. There's a lot of things that I feel like happen in this show just so that we can trigger the next character or plot contrived. Moment. Like I said when she's talking to the housekeeper, which I like that the housekeeper eventually warms up to her, and I don't like, I feel like I'm not a big fan of the trope of the, oh, I was running the household, but now you are here. Mm-hmm. But they at least kind of do something new with it as it goes on. But when she says the whole thing about, like, well, I told his mother that you needed a regular, you know, what did she even
say? She says something about, like...
It's not, like, deposit or whatever,
it basically is, like, make sure the seed gets into the womb.
Yeah.
Wink.
There's no reason for her to have said that.
No.
Except that Daphne had to figure out why she wasn't making babies.
Yeah. It was a plot contrivance. And that's kind of another thing. Like, back to the artist... One thing that I find just really frustrating. So we've already talked about how the whole relationship is super queer baby. So I'm not going to, like, dwell on that. But I am going to say this. So this is a society in which we are told racism happened and was completely overcome
mm-hmm.
because one queen was black.
Mm-hmm.
And
they just haven't had the right kind of black queen yet to erase homophobia, apparently.
Yeah, like, that's kind of what it feels like. Like, it's like, why couldn't we, like, why couldn't we have had some plot where, like, homophobia was going away? It just, like, why did some societal ills stay and some didn't?
Because there are certain period romance tropes that we're still okay and comfortable with, and there's others that we are not. And that's the real issue with Bridgerton, is that we're going to ignore the parts of period history that don't make for entertaining drama.
Yeah.
Racism is deeply dramatic, but not always entertaining drama, especially if you're trying to escape for a little bit. Mm-hmm. But homophobia, on the other hand, there is still some drama in that that can be milked for all it is worth.
Because it is frequently attached to romance in particular.
Yes.
And whereas, like,
racism in romance is never fun. It is always sad.
Yeah.
Whereas the we overcome the obstacle of, you know, homophobia and meet in secret, because it's not ever going to be the main plot, because all of these relationships are going to be.
And the only way they can utilize racism in a way that is feel good is to have it be like, oh, like, this white king fell in love with a black woman, and their the power of love overcame the prejudice of racism. And so they, like, boil it down to this, like trite little non-complex, like, love. They boil down these massive concepts to romantic tropes.
Love
for drama, and it's just annoying.
Yep.
I don't know. Just let it be escapist, if that's what you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And especially because most of the time, they're more interested in sexism and classism. So why not just, like, you want star-crossed lovers? Cool. Make one of the Bridgertons fall in love with someone who is from a lower social socioeconomic status.
Uh-huh.
You know? Like, explore more of the drama with the sexism, if that's what you want to do. Just, I just felt...
Dude, you are going to like, whenever we do TV show recs again, you're going to like my TV show recs so much.
Is it Shadow and Bone?
Yeah. Because literally all these things that you're talking about, like, geez, why can't we have just some, like, escapist, you know? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I will say the show still addresses racism, but it's intentional about that.
See, that's the thing. I want shows that address these things. I'm not saying that it's bad to address them.
But it's kind of the opposite. The homophobia is not... not dramatized.
Cool.
So.
Yeah, like, I guess, I don't know, I'm tired of, like, real world issues being, like, commodified for entertainment with no consequence. Either explore them in a way that really tackles the issue and really makes people think, or let it be escapist and move on.
Yep.
You know?
Yep.
Sorry, my dog's getting in trouble in the background. But yeah, so that's my 2 cents. So Bridgerton is a meh for me.
Yeah, I'm kind of, am I going to watch the next season when it comes out?
Oh, hell yeah.
Hell yes. Because it's...
Ashamedly, but yes.
Yeah. But I'm realizing that this is like watching The Bachelor or The Bachelorette.
This is...
But a period romance version of it.
We have a problem on this show where we're like, it's talking trash. We're talking about movies that suck, and then we pick movies that genuinely are good. They're just, like, underrated.
Yes. This is trash.
This is actual garbage.
This is my garbage.
And I'm okay with that. It's fun garbage. Will I rewatch this season multiple times? Absolutely not. I mean, I've done it twice now. Do I have a third viewing in me? Probably not. Maybe not. I'll put it on in the background while I clean or something.
Right.
But I will watch the next season, and I will complain about Anthony the whole time.
Oh, he's gonna suck so much. I can't wait.
So much.
I can't wait.
But I am excited.
And the Duke's gonna be babysitting. It's gonna be great.
He's not gonna be in the next season.
That's what I mean.
He'll just be like,
he's home with the baby.
He's home with the baby. That makes sense.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Because Daphne's an independent woman who has a trust fund.
She does, because you refused her dowry.
Gosh, I freaking
because
hated
dowries
that.
Dowries are stupid.
I hated that so much.
And we're dancing to a waltz, but it's actually a gallop.
gosh. Here was our last comment on this. In the same way that it couldn't make up its mind with the dancing, did it want to be period accurate line dances and reels? Or did it want to be waltzes mm-hmm. and partner dancing, close contact? In the same way the soundtrack couldn't make up its mind yes. with these episodes. When they get married, it switches to some, like, choral... I said it sounded like a backtrack on a Lana Del Rey song. It does.
It's like some Lana Del Rey crap.
And then we swap back to friggin' Vitamin String Quartet.
And but then there's literally a part where they're making out and there's actual lyrics to a song. Yes. It's like a pop song. And I... excuse me, I keep sneezing.
I keep coughing.
I absolutely lost it. And I am not going to get into this too much, but my dear listeners, please go back and watch the musicians.
Oh, they're so off.
And or the dancers in every scene, because they are never dancing to what's playing, and the musicians are never playing what's playing. And the closest they ever get is with the opera singer. And she's not breathing. No. You can tell she's not singing. It's terrible. They didn't even try. And I'm salty about it. So, the production quality was a lot lower than I remembered last time.
Yes. The costumes are incredibly over the top, and we spent a lot of time griping about it. But at the end of the day, it is distinct, mm-hmm. and I will stand by that. I like this kind of colorful alternate of the past.
Yeah. To me, my only issue is that it feels like they spent all of the budget on the costuming.
Yes.
And didn't...
Some sets, but... Yeah, mostly.
Mostly costuming. So,
yep.
All right. So, that was the Bingeton. We hope you enjoyed.
Our dear listeners.
Have we discussed what we're going to do next?
We have not. We kind of have. We've discussed either doing another show or doing musicals. Having a solid musical month.
I think, because I know you want to show me Shadow and Bone.
I do, but I don't mind waiting on it.
I want to read the books. So,
okay.
Or not, maybe not all of them, but I'd at least like to read, like, the first Shadow and Bone and, like, okay. Six of Crows. And then...
Okay.
I will know the characters.
I will talk to you about the, you're gonna be like me. You're gonna like Six of Crows. Mm. Infinitely more.
Yeah.
But yeah, other than that, we will, yeah, it'll be interesting. I've had the chance to watch it with people who hadn't read the first book mm-hmm. and people who had, and it's been kind of an interesting experience.
I'm still undecided if I do want to read the first book or if I'm just going to jump to Six of Crows. But that's the main one. Like, I want to have, like, I want to develop the characters in my head.
That's actually perfectly fair. And okay. If you're going to do that, I'm going to say, this is my advice to all listeners now. If you're going to do that, I would say read the first Six of Crows. You're going to want to read the second Six of Crows, but don't do it yet. Okay. Don't do it yet.
Okay.
If you still want to go back and not have spoilers for okay. Shadow and Bone is essentially okay. it.
So I might even read them out of order.
I may write up an order for you. I may give you, like, the Star Wars hatchet order.
Perfect.
But for
Love it.
So, yeah, I will then, honestly, for summer, I've been looking forward to doing Musical Month for a while.
Me too.
Mostly because, gosh darn it, I need to watch Mamma Mia once this summer.
It is hot girl summer.
It's hot girl summer.
Have you seen the girl on TikTok that, like, talks about how she cries every time Dancing Queen plays?
Yeah.
I think that has been living in my head rent-free for, like, 3 weeks now. And now every time I hear Dancing Queen, I'm like, it is really beautiful, isn't it? So, okay, let's, next week, join us for Musical Month.
Musical Month.
And then I eventually am going to the beach again, so just know, guys, that during the summer months, it might be a little spotty.
Yeah.
We might have some weeks off. We're going to do our best.
We might try and double up and do some multiple features in a week. Mm-hmm. We'll see, but
yes, definitely. But thanks for tuning in, and I hope you enjoyed our binge-a-ton.
Yes.
And if there's another show that you want us to watch, hit us up on Instagram or on Twitter.
Girly, ridiculous short shows.
Yes.
Yes, please.
I don't really know. Like, I don't really tweet very much, but I feel like if people tweeted at me, I would...
Oh!
Like,
a tweet at me.
I'm not good at starting conversations, but I'm great at continuing them. So feel free to hit us up on Twitter, and let us know what you want us to watch. Or if you have suggestions for Musical Month that maybe we haven't thought of.
This is true.
Because we will definitely be doing multiple Musical Months.
Oh, yeah.
Because we already had a conversation. We can't get them all in.
Yep.
But yeah, so.
We will talk to you shortly.
Yes. Have a great week.
Enjoy the season.
Bye. Thanks for hopping in the trash can with us.
Give this week's movie a watch and tell us what you think.
And let us know what movies you think are trashy treasure.
Maybe we'll give it a watch.
Follow us on Twitter at LivinLizzie to tell us your thoughts.
And remember, no matter how trash you feel, you are deeply treasured.
Bye!